This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio.
The future began 75 years ago with the invention of a device that's seen as the most manufactured item in human history. The transistor was born in New Jersey December 16, 1947. All this week, we're looking at the ecosystems of innovation that turned that invention into nearly everything.
I have to wear protective gloves, but I'm actually right now holding in my hand the first transistor, a cockeyed metal spring pushing a kind of arrowhead wrapped in gold foil down into a shard of germanium, the semiconductor, all that on top of a metal base.
On this campus in Jersey, 45 minutes west of Manhattan, researchers on the payroll of a private company figured out how to make an amplifier that didn't need much power and an on-off switch with no moving parts. This fundamental invention gets us to portable and digital everything. It was called Bell Telephone Laboratories, the research arm of AT&T. At its height, boy, did it have money, because it was a company with no rival. Physicist Michael Reardon is co-author of The History of the Transistor, Crystal Fire.
Bell Labs was kind of like a national laboratory in a way, but it was funded by the American people. I'm old enough to remember when we had to pay a dollar for the first minute of a coast-to-coast telephone call called a toll call. And 3 cents out of that dollar went into R&D, mainly at Bell Labs. So it had the stream of funding and gave them a lot of freedom to follow, you know, their research noses.
Yeah, I mean, being a lab that's connected to a monopoly affords you certain privileges.
That second voice is John Gertner, author of The Idea Factory, Bell Labs in the Great Age of American Innovation.
So the timelines are sort of different. I mean, do you have to beat the competition to market? Not really. Can you work on a system for switching or transmission that might take 10 years or 15 years? Yes, you can, actually.
100 years ago, AT&T was the biggest company in the world and rich enough to scoop up talent even during lean times.
Bell Labs had money to hire people in the Great Depression at a time when a lot of universities did not and a lot of companies did not. Brilliant scientists where Bell Labs could really hire the best and brightest.
Like physicists John Bardeen, Walter Bratton, and William Shockley, who shared a Nobel Prize for the transistor in 1956. 9 Nobels trace here. Ed Eckert is archivist at the present Bell Labs as he looks over original homegrown artifacts.
The cellular concept made cell phones practical. Commercial fax machine, satellite pioneer with Telstar 1, solar cells, the science of radio astronomy. And we discovered the leftover radiation that was considered proof of the Big Bang theory.
Bell Labs survived the court-ordered breakup of the AT&T monopoly in 1984, and some of its culture lives on. These days, it's one of the research centers owned since 2016 by Nokia of Finland. Peter Vetter is president of Nokia Bell Labs Core Research, where even today, there's room for raw exploration.
When a researcher comes to me, I have here an intuition that there is a new way of solving the problem, that they can go after that and say, okay, this sounds good. We put them in contact with different experts, the device physics people, some AI algorithmic people, so that they can really enrich the idea.
With wireless, about every 10 years, it's a new G, and Vetter's folks are now working on 6G. Plus, crazy fast quantum computing, and a new, not so small step for mankind. The first
cellular network on the moon.
This is Nokia, but you may well ask why the Bell Lab transistor didn't turn AT&T in the 1950s and 60s into another IBM or Sony. Well, see, even decades before AT&T's breakup, officials in Washington didn't want a monopoly phone company nosing into other businesses, like computers.
They were sort of bound by various agreements with the federal government that they were in the telecommunications business,